Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The latest from 7 News with Michael Usher.
Good evening and welcome to the latest on Australia's house price slump. It's the first time a drop in the average price of dwellings has been recorded since September 2020. Tonight, we'll hear what's causing the slowdown and also talk to a leading economist on concerns about the Reserve Bank ahead of another interest rate rise. Joining me now in the studio is Network Finance Editor Gemma Acton. Gem, good evening to you.
Hi, Michael.
Talk us through some of where the biggest falls in house prices have been.
Well, this is very much concentrated to Sydney, Melbourne and Canberra. Canberra, which saw in May the first drop it's had since 2019. But really apart from that, Sydney and Melbourne is where we're seeing this. Every other city and region is still seeing growth. Now, admittedly, that growth is slowing down. Take somewhere like Hobart, which saw really fast growth ahead of the pandemic and during the pandemic. Some suburbs there are seeing falls and growth there has really slowed down. Some Brisbane suburbs are seeing falls, even though overall there's still growth. The two cities that are really bucking the trend are Perth and Adelaide. Although it is worth noting that the median house price there is a lot lower than elsewhere. In Sydney, the median house price is still around 1.1 million. In Perth, it's around half a million, and in Adelaide, about $630,000.
So if the brakes are on in our biggest centre, Sydney, Melbourne, is that a trend? Is that going to continue?
It will continue, most likely, because the drivers of that slowdown are still in place and are still relevant. For instance, interest rates. As you mentioned, we had the first interest rate hike last month, and we've been told to brace for several more. Banks wasted no time in passing that on to mortgage holders, and at a time when all our other costs are going up as well, it really makes a difference if you're paying a bit more even on your monthly mortgage repayments. Also, housing stock's an interesting one to watch. Housing stock levels are still really depressed compared to historical averages, down around 10% across the country compared to a year ago, and around 28% lower if you look at the five-year average. But they're starting to pick up in Melbourne and Sydney. You're actually seeing higher stock now than a year ago in those cities, and it's winter. This is not a traditionally strong selling season, so as we move into spring, we can expect stock levels to pick up even further. The last thing to note is consumer sentiment. It's really depressed right now, well below long-term averages, and people don't get excited to rush into buying something major like a house when they're feeling this low. I would just caution, despite this pullback and a slight fall in certain places, house prices are still 27% higher than where they were pre-pandemic. So a long way to go before that's lost.
Yeah. What about rental prices, though? Because they're quickly going up. Is that a national trend?
Very much so. So in May, rents went up across Australia by around 1%, which is a lot in the space of a month. Over the last year, in the cities by around 9%, in the regions by around 11%. What we're seeing is unit rents now rise much more quickly, which is not very surprising as compared to house rents, given that with the borders reopening, we're seeing migration start to pick up again, and unit rents is where you'll see that pressure. And that's just starting to come back. You know, migration is nowhere near the levels it was. There's a lot of catch up to do there. So this pressure can be expected to continue. When you talk to organisations that look after Australians who are struggling, a lot of them call it a rental crisis.
Yeah. All right. Gemma, thank you for that.
Thanks, Michael.
The Reserve Bank's interest rates decision next week comes amid heavy scrutiny, with new Treasurer Jim Chalmers about to order a major review of Australia's central bank. 12 leading economists have written an open letter on the matter, asking the Treasurer to ensure the planned review is conducted independently. One of those who crafted the letter is Assistant Professor of Economics and Visiting Fellow at the Australian National University, Stephen Hamilton. Stephen, good evening to you.
G'day.
So what should the main goals of the review be? Does the Reserve Bank need a complete overhaul, and why the independence?
Yeah, so I'm not sure it needs a complete overhaul, but what I think is, you know, we've had a few decades of pretty intense economic upheaval, right? We've had the global financial crisis. Since then, we've had the pandemic. Between those two crises, we've had a very unusual period of very low interest rates, low inflation, and high unemployment. So, you know, after that decade and a half of pretty intense economic upheaval, it's a good time to step back and reflect on whether our monetary policy institution, the Reserve Bank of Australia, is fit for purpose, looking ahead to the future when we could experience, you know, more upheaval, right? Things that we don't even anticipate at this point. So I think it's a great time to do that. I also think if you look at central banks across the world, it's very standard for them to have external reviews, independent reviews. And if we want that institution, which is so important to the Australian economy, to be functioning properly, then this is exactly the kind of thing I think we need.
So today, the US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen conceded her government got it wrong on how sharply inflation rose. In the Reserve Bank's interest rate rise last month, the Governor Philip Lowe said inflation picked up, quote, more quickly than expected. Just have a listen now to Lowe's prediction last year of no rate rises until 2024, then his messaging after last month's board meeting. Have a listen.
We do not expect it to be before 2024, and it's possible it will be later than this.
It is now time to begin withdrawing some of the extraordinary monetary policy support that was put in place to help the Australian economy during the pandemic.
All right, so the question there, Stephen, is have our global institutions just completely missed the mark on interest rates and inflation?
Yeah, so it's a good question. No one's perfect. That's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is if you ask five economists, you may get five different answers to that question. So the key thing is a review of the Reserve Bank should not be a performance appraisal of Philip Lowe or anybody else, right? The point of the review is to look at our institution. Look at its structure, look at its culture, look at the mandate given to it by the government, look at the Reserve Bank Act. So look at all of those structures and think, are they set up in a way that is conducive to good decision making, right? To good economic management. That's the question of the review. Now, I think looking over the last sort of 3 to 4 years, right, it's a very unprecedented situation. We had a pandemic that we haven't seen in 100 years. And as we see, central banks across the world got lots of things wrong. So I wouldn't want to judge any regime too harshly, but I would say we do need to think critically about how the Reserve Bank functions through this period. And again, we need to be thinking of setting the Reserve Bank up for the next crisis, right? Are they well placed to handle future challenges?
But any review would have to consider how they got that prediction wrong. No rises before 2024 then, even though it was Lowe saying it, but there's a group of people behind him. Any review would have to consider how the Reserve Bank got that one so wrong.
Yeah, so I think I would focus there not so much on the decision, but on the guidance, right? So the most critical asset that a central bank has is its credibility, right? It has to give clear communication to the market, to ordinary people, to ensure its credibility, right? And if you give guidance in the future that you may have to backflip on, that undermines your credibility. So rather than saying the decision was wrong, the review, I think, would look at whether the communication strategy was wrong. Rather than tying interest rates to a calendar, should they instead have tied it to a state of the economy so that if they updated, they weren't backflipping, they were just picking a different item on the menu.
Right, okay. Another big decision next week, interest rates almost likely to go up again. How much do you think?
Yeah, so today's GDP figures were pretty robust, right? I mean, I think looking at the first quarter of this year, January, February, March, you know, we had a lot of crazy things, floods, you know, the lockdowns or the reduced activity in January, right, you know, shortages. We had all sorts of things that should be restraining economic activity. And yet we had a really robust quarter of 0.8% growth. So I think with all of the other evidence we have, the strong inflation figures, all of the real-time data, I would say a significant interest rate rise next week of something in the order of 0.4 to 0.5. We're currently at 0.35. That's record low still, right? So I think interest rates have a ways to go up, and the Reserve Bank should sort of make up for lost time and increase rates pretty substantially, I'd say.
If they do increase them substantially, does that reduce the heat on the next round, or do we just keep on going up for some time now?
We've got a long way to go, to be honest. I think what you should be thinking of is the target inflation band is around 2.5%, and interest rates are currently 0.35%. So in real terms, interest rates are significantly negative, right? So they're going to have to go up at least to 2 to 3% in the short term, right, in the next 12 months, in order just for monetary policy to be neutral, right? So the question, you don't want to jack them up the full amount overnight, but you don't want to also move too slowly and let inflation start to take off. So that getting that balance right is going to be a challenge for the Reserve Bank. But I think, again, increasing pretty substantially in the order of 0.5, I think, would be consistent with that.
And those GDP figures today, some people might go cross-eyed when we talk about GDP, but they matter. did they surprise you?
Yeah, they were definitely on the strong side. But, you know, we've had a lot of indicators that have been suggesting strong economic growth, right? We have unemployment below 4% now at 3.9, right, which is the lowest level in 50 years. We have very strong household balance sheets. We have very robust inflation. All of these numbers are consistent with one another, right? They tell a picture of an economy at its economic speed limit. Right. So 0.8 for a quarter is robust, but that's consistent with that. Now, the issue is the Reserve Bank's going to have to start to raise rates to take some of the heat out of the market. And that will pull back economic activity a little over the next 12 months. And you can see the Reserve Bank itself already indicates a sort of slight slowing compared to what they previously thought.
Well, you mentioned the speed rate, but the unions would say there's a two-speed system in this economy right now. And the stats showing profits are going up, but workers aren't getting a fair share of the wealth. I guess they're talking about wages and growth there. Do you agree with that?
Look, economic data is volatile. I don't like to point to any particular month or particular quarter and pretend that gives a broad picture. But I would say it is going to be a tough time. We've got very high inflation of up to 6%. And wages are going to rise. They'll rise slower, but they won't rise by that amount, right? So there's kind of no way of avoiding a reduction in people's real wages in the short term. I think what we need to do is look through this short-term upheaval to the next 2 to 3 years and make sure the government is focused on reforms, right? The focus on economic policy that can get those wages growing faster in a way that doesn't push up inflation. I think that should be where our focus is.
There's a lot more to come. We'll be talking about this a lot more as well. Stephen Hamilton from the Australian National University. Appreciate it. Thank you. And that's the latest on Australia's house price slump and the economic matters. Thanks for your company. I'm Michael Usher.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.